the Grade Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a Grade Cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the Grade Cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grey Cricketer podcast on Fox Sports. My name is Ian Higgins. I'm joined today by Sam Perry, Dave Edwards. It's a huge show, chaps. It's a huge show. It's a trifecta of guests. We're very privileged. Brett Jeeves is coming on the show.
Jeeva.
Will Pekowski.
Pekowska.
Sorry. And Mickey Edwards is coming on the show. It's a trifecta of guests. The cult hero, the protege, and the controversial figure. What a huge show. Gents, welcome.
Good.
Thanks,
good.
Thanks for framing the episode so succinctly.
That was. But now I'm thrown because normally it's as ever. I'm joined by Sam Perry and Dave Edwards.
Well, you're throwing us off because sometimes you're here and sometimes you're not.
Yeah, it's my fault.
Scheduling error, just like Cricket Australia.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just a walking scheduling error. Indeed. Well, look, let's reflect on the SCG.
Let's do it, man.
Quickly. I think we've been castigated by our fans enough for just dropping names here and there.
I feel castrated.
Yeah. Similar. Yeah, you wouldn't want those.
It's not
words.
What you said. Just for those who might just suddenly be listening to this podcast randomly, we were at the SCG all week for the third test, Australia versus Pakistan, and we had media passes. We were given accreditation, so we spent the whole week at the SCG rubbing shoulders with Jim Maxwell, Shane Warne, Gus Warland.
Sometimes literally.
It's interesting because we could have been doing anything else with that extra week of holidays. Like I was scheduled to go back to work on the 3rd, but I decided to take an extra week. But I couldn't do anything because Can't got cricket.
It's kind of interesting, actually. We're going to be talking to Brett Jeeves in a second.
Jeeva. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the right, as we call him.
The German.
Exactly.
German, yeah.
And he mentions in this kind of controversial article that came out today that all cricketers ever want to do is just rub shoulders with those with higher status than them. And that's all we did for a week. And, oh, God, it was heavenly. Yeah. I really recommend it.
Still felt like the great cricketers of the media world, though. We were kind of on the outer, weren't we? We were never really in.
I still haven't picked up the Sheffield Shield, so I can't talk to Brendan Julian yet. Boys, let's sum up the summer. Because the summer of Test cricket has now been completed.
The summer in sum.
I don't know if you guys remember, but we played against South Africa at the beginning of the summer, and we didn't win that series. There was a pink ball test in there, of course. A guy called Nick Maddison played for Australia. Yes. A few others, Ferguson, Joe Menny played cricket for Australia. There were some more guys who played cricket for Australia, and now some don't anymore because there's been a subsequent series. I don't know where to start with this, but what are you guys' thoughts on the whole summer? I mean, the summer as a whole for Test series, was it a successful Test series for the Australian cricketing people and the players?
Oh, it was a roller coaster, wasn't it? I think what you were mentioning before was kind of the key, and here's a word that's a bit of a cliche, but it's the key narrative. There was selection upheaval in the Australian side. I think
that's
when we look back on it, we'll be looking at a time when the chairman of selectors was cut.
Yeah.
Rod Marsh.
Yeah.
And then there was this influx of new players, of youth. Renshaw was kind of out with the old, in with the new, but he plays old school. That was interesting. Hanscom was kind of the anointed. He was the next cab off the rank. And Nick Maddison was the investment in talent. He was the one who was sort of meant to make it because he looks good.
A speculative tech stock.
And that's right. And that was the main metaphor that was used to describe him.
Right.
How's the song go? 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
2 out of 3 ain't bad, yeah. I mean, I feel like the series has already been forgotten. The South Africa series has already been forgotten.
Conveniently so. I mean, I can't even remember back that far, but you're right. It was tumultuous. So much happened. Rod Marsh gone. New selectors in, new players in. Some of those, as you say, don't play cricket for Australia anymore, but they did play cricket for Australia at one point. Yeah. They're gone and forgotten. Joe Menny,
welcome to the
Callum
Ferguson
podcast. Had their taste of Test cricket. And Test cricket is so hard to taste.
Yeah.
It's always just out of reach, and they had it. And now they're never going to need another look in, are they?
Yeah, probably not. I mean, this is something that I spoke about with you guys at the SCG during the last week, was that, it's all about timing, isn't it? It's all about time because, I mean, what Callum Ferguson would have given to be batting at 4 for 1 million when Hilton Cartwright came in for his Test debut, for instance. But Callum Ferguson was playing on a seaming wicket in Hobart and against a very good attack of Rabada and Abbott et al. I mean, he obviously got run out, so that didn't, he couldn't blame the wicket. But still, I mean, it's all about timing, isn't it? So even at that elite level, you still need a huge amount of luck as to who you're playing against, what position you come in into the game. It's all luck. It's all luck. Don't bother with skill. It's all about luck.
And then Pakistan came along.
Oh, yeah.
They came onto our shores, and this was our chance to really come good, wasn't it? With all these
restore
selections
pride.
That happened, restore pride. There was so much navel-gazing and introspection, and, you know, we really did an assessment on the health of Australian cricket in general over those scary couple of weeks there towards the end of the year. But then Pakistan came, and we just dominated from the outset, didn't we? I mean, the first test was actually quite a close one.
Yeah.
The second and third test were what I would call processions.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, the second test in particular was just Australia won out of nowhere. There was about 6 days of rain, but Australia played three sessions of cricket and then just bowled Pakistan out. I mean, for mine, guys, the whole summer of test cricket was, I've got to be honest, it was disappointing. I was excited about the prospect of beating South Africa early doors because I was excited to get back into the cricket season. And we just performed really badly. And the matches were often finished in the first about a day and a bit. It was obvious that Australia weren't going to win. And then I was excited to see Pakistan, the most mercurial side in the world, even more so than the West Indies. They've got these wonderful players who are all match winners. And I was excited to see Shah bowl. But Pakistan was so disappointing, except for when they almost chased down 500 in the fourth innings. Aside from that, which is obviously huge, but aside from that, they were really...
But weren't they really gracious and they smiled the whole time they were here while we dominated them? It was good to see that they were. They took their humiliation with, you know, good grace.
But is that also on the flip side bad? You know,
well, in Australian cricket, it would be.
There were no boiling points. No. Yes. No one blew up at anybody else, and deep down, we really want it.
Well, South Africa delivered on that. There was so much of that tension underlying the whole series.
Yeah, because I asked Dirk Nanners about this. I said it was a weird summer, and I didn't get to finish my question. He just looked at me.
He left the room.
Have you?
Whilst playing saxophone.
Well, he was skiing, so. But he said no, it wasn't a weird summer because it was just much more of the same summer that we've always had, just a procession of beating weak touring sides, and that's what the summer has finished off as, isn't it? Just beating a really poor Pakistan side who were on the beach for the last two Test matches.
I guess, like, to try and be fair about it, the South Africa series was a really good series. It's just that we lost. My only problem was that both sets of series got to 2-0, so the last match was dead. And really that means if the second match is won reasonably quickly too, as it was with South Africa, then you've just got half a series of cricket that is not alive.
Yeah.
And that's not fun. You know?
It's not fun.
I mean, look at the SCG. We sort of murmured it while we were there, and it was always murmurs. But when was the last time there was a live SCG test match?
I don't recall.
It's just this kind of sleepy New Year's thing where lots of Sydney people come out wearing Ralph Lauren.
It's a social event. It's to pin it in the social calendar at the beginning of the year, get there, wear your finest threads, rub shoulders with the elite.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is interesting because Andrew Jones, we didn't get to ask this because a story broke about as we were talking with him, but he was saying that Sydney deserves a second test match. And I think there's a lot of merit in that. I mean, he was talking purely numbers, percentage-based, huge.
He said that actually on Grandstand just before our interview, so we weren't skilled enough to get that answer out of him.
Yeah, I actually thought he did it 2 hours afterwards. We just went to show how poor we were at getting a scoop.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're just three blokes from the internet.
We will be.
Just three knock-around blokes from the internet. So, I mean, but I think there's some merit in that. I mean, because he was just talking percentage-based, but, I mean, there's also, wouldn't it just be nice just for once if a Sydney test match wasn't just completely dead?
Well, I'm glad we're probably going to lose 3/4 of our listeners as well just for being
they know the score. They know the score.
More test matches.
Yeah, 2-0.
So what now, boys? The test series is over.
Yeah, that's finished.
India looms large on the horizon, but there's some stuff going on in between, I guess.
Mate, it's going
on. Just what now, boys? We just don't talk like that. Like off air. What now, boys, with the cricket? How are we going to enjoy
what
the cricket?
What now, boys? Yeah. What now?
Well, there's a couple of ODIs coming on. That's what you must call it. ODIs
between Australia and Pakistan. Tract infection.
FML. No, are Pakistan good at one-day cricket, or can we openly admit we have no idea?
Mate, they're good in the UAE, I think. But then, are they good here? Are they good anywhere else except for the UAE? I don't know. I'm expecting Australia to win comfortably. I think Australia are pretty strong in the one days. It's so hard to tell, man. Like, there's just too much scattered cricket going on.
Yeah.
I'm looking at scores at the Big Bash. You know, there's a test match I've just finished. ODIs. Then there's some... So we were talking about this just before, that Dave Warner was complaining about the scheduling issue the Cricket Australia have organised. So basically, the Australian test team will be in India slightly before in preparation for the India series. Now, at the same time that they're going to be there, Australian T20 team will be playing against Sri Lanka in a 3 T20 series. So there's going to be about four blokes that'll affect: Khawaja, Warner himself, Stark, and the captain, Steve Smith. So those guys won't be able to play in the T20 series against Sri Lanka because they're going to be in India playing some test match cricket or preparing for the test match series. So, I mean, this is just capitalism winning, isn't it? It doesn't matter who's playing. It's not best versus best. It's just that there's matches going on. The gates are open, buying tickets. That's all that matters, isn't it?
The triumph of commerce over tradition in cricket, you know, which we obviously talk about quite a lot off air and are very earnest about.
For sure.
Does it bother you at all? Or is T20 eyes, as they call them now, just another format that we clap our eyes onto while we're making a pasta at night and then just talk to our partners and have it on mute?
Well, for me, that's how I see the Big Bash. Yeah. I come home from work. I know it's on at 7:30. I might catch the project beforehand. I'll switch it on. I'll put it on mute so I can have a conversation over dinner with my partner. Mm, and then I'll maybe catch the scores on social media. And if something really good happens, I might turn it up. Or I might just go to bed and forget all about it and read about it the next day. It's not capturing me too much. I don't know how your thoughts are on that, Higgins.
I completely agree with you. I think it just dilutes the product. There's so much cricket going on that it's like spread the resources out entirely. And I'm just not convinced that there's such a love of all forms of cricket that it warrants three forms. I'm of the opinion that I think you can scrap the one days because I think that there's not... I think you can play more T20s and play international T20s. I think people want to see that. I just think ODIs will eventually die out, and I don't think it's going to happen this year, but it might happen in 15 years, for instance. I don't see it's sustainable to have three formats, particularly when you've got...
But the kids love it, he goes. The kids.
Well, the kids love T20.
And it's content, and ODIs are just a cash cow.
Yeah, we'll play more T20s. Play more T20s.
Just back to back on like separate fields, like a school match or something. Just have heaps going.
Overlapping circles.
I mean, I love that a bowler can still take 5 wickets in an ODI, and a batsman can score 100. I like that.
Yes.
I mean, that's great because I'm a traditionalist in that respect.
Yes.
But I just think that T20 is a great product. It's a great brand, and it's introducing new people to the game, which is ultimately good, and ultimately that would be good for Test cricket. We're talking very earnestly.
This is the most earnest chat we've had on this podcast.
Well, it's the end of summer, you know. We've been in the press box, and we're starting to think deeply. It's kind of
starting to think like a journalist.
It's starting to dilute any existing humour we had.
Yeah,
just got a couple of knock around blokes from the internet.
Yeah,
but Indian, I like Indian. ODI cricket can sell ads, more ads, right? Mm. It goes for longer, hence ads.
Yeah, ads.
So that's why it still exists.
Are you upset that no one comes to watch you play cricket? Are you tired of no one appreciating you for the talented third grader you are? The Cricket Family is the first program dedicated to helping people like you feel relevant again. We have a database of over 1,000 out-of-work actors who can come to your games and masquerade as your friend, girlfriend, wife, parents, or grandparents, helping you create the perception that the people close to you actually care about what you do.
Great shot, Jason.
No, I'm proud of you, son.
The Cricket Family, helping cricketers feel relevant once again.
Boys, we've been trying to tee up this interview for quite some time, but the man we have on the other end of the line has been in great demand through all media.
High property.
Exactly. I just want to run through some statistics here. 18 years old. that's a number. It's the first one. It's the lowest one. Emerged from the national championships, otherwise known as the under-19s comp.
Yeah.
With 650 runs from 8 innings, including 4 centuries. Mm. Don't know how many you've ever made in your lives, either of you. Mm. His name's Will Pekowski. He's just played against Pakistan yesterday in the CA11. Everybody's talking about him, so we felt we should too. Will, welcome to The Great Cricketer.
Thanks very much for having me, guys. It's an honour.
Thank you very much. I think the honour's ours, to be fair. We look back in maybe 10 or 15 years. Will, I know that you're sort of like a darling of the media at the moment because you just cannot stop scoring runs. Like, what are most people asking you?
to be honest, have all been very generic questions that the media training that was mentioned in the article has prepared me well for.
How do they train you just to kind of spin the question around and start talking about government policy and stuff?
I guess we just have like one or two sessions a year just through the academy. And it's not like scripting or anything like that. It's just about trying to make yourself, I guess, sound reasonable and try and be as natural as possible without, you know, saying anything too outlandish or anything like that.
They're not trying to get you to slip in any core messaging in that at all.
No, I haven't been on the end of that just yet.
I mean, before we get into your career, Will, I mean, what are your thoughts on the immigration policy in Australia?
The Big Bash League is good. You know?
Funny you say that. I'm actually watching it right now.
Four Corners.
Well, Peter Dutton's first comments.
All right, let's go into that. Let's go jump straight into it. Will, I don't even want to talk about your batting just yet. I've read that you are studying, or you're going to study arts at Monash, or you want to sort of pursue that path. I mean, what are you doing trying to be an intellectual cricketer? You know that's not the path to success if recent articles that go by.
I've done a year of arts at Monash, so started last year. It was a bit of a bludge the first year, to be honest, just tried to get through.
What did you take? Did you take like gender studies or what
sociology?
Kind of?
Oh, there was some really I don't really know what I want to do yet. So it's just
play cricket for Australia.
It's just been kind of looking at all the subjects and whichever one has the best title generally gets selected. So I was sort of going through that this year. So I think terrorism was one of them, just because
it's
a subject. Like reasonably interesting.
Yeah. Well, one thing I've learned over the years is while you're trying to figure out what you want to do with your life, just rack up as much hex debt as possible.
Then you can move overseas and never pay it back.
I don't worry about that, because all you have to do is fill out a quick form for that at the moment.
We'll go into your career now gently, Will. I mean, you've just hit so many hundreds lately.
So many.
I'm just wondering, like, what do you feel when you hit 100 now? And do you even feel anything at all?
the feeling definitely stays there. It's just, it's obviously, as a batsman, it's always... That's, I guess, the ultimate goal going into every inning.
Nah, none of this core messaging, mate.
Can I just pick up on that? Because there's a piece that quotes you recently saying, I think we won all the games that I made hundreds in, so that was good. That's what makes them even better. So that's your first lie, because obviously hundreds in losing sides are the greatest hundreds.
That's the greatest feeling.
You can smugly look at your teammates and say, at least I contributed.
That's one of the great
tweets
that our family
love. So, I mean, you said before, you know, you hinted... I think when we're off air that your dad does follow the great cricketer. I mean, it sounds like you have a good relationship with your dad. I mean,
What's that about?
Because because the question I was going to ask before that is how many hundreds did it take for your dad to love you? And I need
just
a specific
love how
number.
All this relates to the tweets. It's like literally just it's that good.
We're just talking tweets. Yeah.
No, I don't know. He probably still doesn't love me. We got a year ago.
Why is it funny?
He seems to have a lot of time for that, but he's apparently his knee's a bit too sore and comes to his bow down these days, so he's having to go walk the dog at the park, and that's about it.
And whenever you do hit one of your regular hundreds, like how do you celebrate? I mean, you're a young man, do you go out on the circuit, or is it so commonplace now that you just like go home afterwards and read a book or surf the internet?
I get my favourite dinner every time, so I get to pick dinner when I get home. Oh, so that's always handy.
Are you cooking it, or is mum and dad cooking that?
Oh, absolutely not. No chance. It's usually takeaway, so no one has to cook, but. Yep. If it's like a steak and a salad, I'll sit on the couch and it'll get whipped up for me. So that's my special treat.
Will, I can just see through, like in the public here, you're very modest and you're also studying art, so you're clearly very self-aware. That's not going to hold you in good stead as your career goes on, I promise you.
Yeah.
But you're very modest publicly. I'm just wondering, given you score so many hundreds, you can't actually be modest. You must be arrogant. And what your outlet for that is. You know, like, are you in the dressing room saying, how many hundreds have you scored, champ, etc.?
It's definitely, like, I try to keep as level-headed as possible around cricket, but when I get around my mates, it probably becomes a bit of a different story.
Are you definitely the cricketer in your social group? Mm.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, they give me heaps of stick for it, so I have to come up with witty replies and stuff like that.
Is it hard when you're really successful?
Just like a screenshot of you like raising your bat for yet another 100. You just show them that?
I don't want to say some of the stuff that goes on because like it's just too embarrassing. But yeah, it is one of those things where you do cop a bit from your mates, but it's all fun and games, and you've all got your different little outlets to get them back with. So no problems there.
So well, you've now played, you've dabbled a little bit in grade cricket as well. I just want to know. What are some of the things that some of the senior players who maybe have perhaps had some shortcomings in their own career and life, of course, famously. I mean, what are some of the things that these senior players have done to sort of alpha you to make them feel better about themselves?
I've got a couple about like the standard of opposition. So under 19s is apparently against kids and
legally.
They're not up to the standard of grade cricket.
Right.
Football.
Yeah.
Less alcoholism.
That brings me down pretty quickly.
Okay.
But does
what
it?
Else is there?
I'm just wondering if you have kind of, if there are different behavioural approaches from the maybe 10 other guys you play with at Melbourne. Some of them might try and alpha you immediately and say that you've just been playing against kids. Others might try and be your best mate all of a sudden based on the amount of runs that you've scored. Do you have any like that as well, who are just all of a sudden texting you and wanting to get a beer and stuff like that?
Yeah, it actually is a bit like that. Like, it's easier to jump on the bandwagon. But no one wants
the Will Pekoski bandwagon, is that what you call it?
Yeah, no one wants to be mates with me other than that, so it's kind of hard like that. But
wait till you start getting a few ducks, mate.
Andrew Kent from Melbourne asked me if I'd even made 1,000 runs for the club yet, so that was an interesting one.
He's played for 37 seasons, but he's hit a guy last year.
After he notched up about his 10,000, that was a good one for him.
No, he's good like that.
But no, other than that, it's just been, down to the D's. Everyone's always been good, though, down there. So it's good fun, it's good banter, and everyone's happy for you, but at the same time, you do cop a fair bit of stick.
I mean, Will, given that the law of averages suggests that you're about to embark on the leanest post-Christmas season since Ajit Agarkar, what systems have you got in place to help you get through the inevitable and forthcoming dark, dark Saturday afternoons? That's a tweet.
Certainly not your terrorism class.
That's a tough one, actually. You've stumped me there. I guess just always reminding myself that it's a really, really bad game.
You've already hit 10 hundreds this summer. Yeah, that's probably a good way to get through it.
Well, because it's one of those games where it's always going to come and get you, so you've got to enjoy it whilst you can.
Do you really mean that, though? I mean, or are you just sort of parroting what you're told to say because it sounds good? Because if you score that many hundreds...
I well and truly believe that it is a bad, bad game. Like, it's just, I don't know.
It just goes on for ages, eh?
It's addictive, though. It's addictive. Yeah.
I bet it is.
But then 90% of the time, it's just a failure. And you just sit there going, like, why do I bother?
You have to watch other people who you hate bat. Yeah.
So you've tasted despair. That's interesting to me. Like, when
your furrowed brow. Like, yeah. Really.
So gothic.
I mean, I'm wondering, like, at what stage of your young career did you taste despair and where was it and how did you cope with it?
I'm trying to think. There was a few times in juniors where
you only
got 80. Got out, it was just like the world was over.
Yeah.
But you sort of got used to that.
Yeah.
I think when I got injured, that was really bad, having to like go and watch every week. That's actually more painful than like the bad things that can happen in cricket, having to go watch.
Mm. You actually don't like not playing.
Sorry?
You actually don't like not playing. Most people enjoy when they don't have to
play
cricket.
Yeah, well, the old walk around, but I don't know. I just hate it. Just not being able to be involved.
No, I agree with you there, Will, because I missed a season a couple of years ago when I through injury, and it was actually worse because I didn't choose not to play. Yeah. I just could. I was incapacitated, and it was much.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I still hadn't filled my life with other things.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I Saturday morning, what are you doing Saturday? You go to the cricket, even though I wasn't playing.
Exactly.
So I still went and watched, and I just realised, wow, I need to get a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone else is doing fun things on their Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Sitting there watching cricket.
Yeah.
So as we know and we've established through this interview, Will, the social status is directly connected to the amount of runs you score and the friends that you make and stuff like that. How many people have you started alphaing now that you've scored all these runs? How many? And to be specific, how many people's how much eye contact do you avoid now, and how many people's shoulders do you look over?
Both shoulders of a single person, or just the left?
How do you answer that?
Oh, 24 people. I don't talk to fourth grade anymore. Basically, that's what I want
to
hear.
I'm trying to stay as modest as I can, but I guess.
But it's hard.
But also,
you smash real hard.
Also, you're smashing him.
Well, yeah. I can't answer any of these without sounding like an idiot. You've set me up beautifully.
Well, here's an easy one. Here's an easy one. Well, when you're famous, can I have some gloves?
Is that related to the Christmas Day tweet? I like that one.
That's just a general question that hovers there with anyone we talk to. If there's any spare kit going around, just keep us in mind.
Yeah, yeah. I'm right-handed.
No worries. I can try and get some up to you.
All right, cheers. Possible, brilliant.
Thanks, mate. We'll sort you out with the address later.
Just finally, is there anything from the opposition that you're hearing that might be of interest? Anything funny as you just continue to plunder runs?
Yeah.
I got a few good ones on the weekend, actually. I got, like, gee, you've got a fat ass, which I do, but that was just a general one.
Is that Pat Howard?
And then, when I first came back to grade cricket after being away, I got the kids' call as well. That was one that I got from my teammates and the opposition.
Yeah. You scored 100, though, didn't you?
Yeah, you scored 100.
So. Yeah, what is this, under 11s?
Yeah.
And then, what else have I got? I got on the weekend, when I got to 50, someone said, finally, you've made some runs, now you need to learn how to go on and make 100. I thought that was pretty smart, I guess.
Yeah,
and then I got a couple about, like, just, let's get this bloke while he's out of form. Like, it's just it's kind of funny when you're out there. But
that's right. So,
well, these kind of make
hating
their lives.
It doesn't sound as good.
Mm. This sounds like a lot of lonely men playing great cricket. Shocking.
Mm. What about...
I need to get more witty.
Just quickly as well, and we didn't talk about this. I mean, you played against Pakistan yesterday.
Yeah.
What was that like? What were they sledging you with?
What is this, under 11s?
It's a bad thing. I couldn't understand it because I genuinely couldn't.
Mm. Oh, but, she could.
I guess, it was just one of those things. They didn't have much for me. I don't think they're that interested about some kid who's managed to get a bit lucky in a bit of a junior comp. But,
yeah.
It'd be interesting if they did read a lot of my cricket, though. They were all over you.
That's the guy.
Yeah, that's Pekowski.
They were good. They were actually a good bunch of guys. So they were nice, and it wasn't too much sledging. It'd be kind of hard. It's kind of hard to take it seriously if it's in another language. So, yeah.
Well, Will, thank you for enduring that. I think that's the best way of saying it. I hope, like, our aim was to be slightly different from the stock questions you've been getting from
you've done very well at that.
Thank you. Great. Please, let's record that. we really, I mean, what you have achieved is incredible.
It is a wonderful story, and you're doing really well at cricket, which is fantastic, and we like to live vicariously through anything that's good. So thank you for allowing us that, and thanks for your time, mate, and all the best for the rest of the season.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, Will.
Harry Broad, good morning. You've been reading The Grade Cricketer.
But most of the book has taken up with proving he isn't good enough. Locker room language is rife and sexual immaturity is rampant. Having sexual relations is called burgling a chop. I'm very disappointed. I thought this should be a great book.
Well, boys, a new cult hero emerged during the third test between Australia and Pakistan, and it wasn't nice Gary Lyon. It was a young upstart with a shock of blonde hair who came and captured all our hearts. I'm talking about Mickey Edwards. Welcome to the Grey Cricketer Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Love what you guys do. Such a big fan.
Mickey, you've obviously been on the media circuit. I mean, we'll talk about circuiting later because I do want to know what happened after the SCG's Test match. But you've had a lot of press this week. You've done Sunrise. You've done Fox Sports. We've got you back into Fox Sports in an audio capacity. We tried you before, and you're doing more media commitments. So when will the media circus end?
I'm actually pretty surprised it's gone on this long. To be honest, I thought it'd be sort of all blown over by Sunday morning. But yeah, still doing these things, but and loving it.
Are you taking any new angles when you're getting these questions? I'm probably assuming you're getting the same questions over and over again, but are you kind of getting creative with your answers?
No, I've just written them down. This is actually a voice recording.
Before, Mickey, when you you know, when you go overseas or something, or like have had surgery or something, and everyone goes, oh, how was it? And you just tend to get really used to answering the same thing. I know a lot of people are asking you about your blonde locks and what you're going to do with your blonde locks, or your budgie smuggler profile pic or whatever. Have you come up with any new answers for that?
Not really. I don't know. I'm not that imaginative to be able to come up with various different answers for the same question. I might try. throw a spanner in the works sooner or later.
But seriously, though, tell us about the haircut.
Yeah, don't.
No, no, I don't want to.
No, that was more a question for Dave, I think, than it was for you. Yeah. Mickey, I mean, let's start from the beginning. I mean, not the beginning of your life, but let's start from the situation where you were actually asked, where you were invited, I suppose, to substitute field for the Australian cricket team. Tell us how this all came about.
So basically, I got a call from one of the ladies at Cricket New South Wales in the week, just asked me if I'd like to just run drinks for the team. It was actually meant to be at work that day at Budgie Smuggler, so I had to tell them that I'm going to be sick and can't work. So. And then turned up that day, and actually, I wasn't the change room security guard. Actually, didn't let me in at the start because she was worried that I didn't look dressed up enough to be in the members' stand. So I had to get one of the guys to let me in. So that wasn't a good start to the day.
Mm. Well, I mean, I wouldn't be too disheartened with that, because Usman Khawaja was shown to the Pakistan dressing rooms in Brisbane, I think.
Yes,
it was. So
right.
Don't be too disheartened by security people getting it wrong. So, okay, the situation, so you get yourself into the Australian dressing room, you get yourself into the high-vis gear, and these days you're given it's not a baggy green, but it's a baggy green substitute, isn't it, instead of just wearing, because I mean, like in the 90s, they give you like a floppy or like a baseball cap as well, I think that was an option. So so you've been kitted out. I'm just telling you what happened now. This is me in racing about what happened.
Oh, I forgot.
and so the moment comes when, who was it who came off the field for you?
I think initially it was Usman coming off for a toilet break, but then after that it was David Warner coming off.
Okay.
I think he was a bit crook.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So now run us through what you were feeling in those moments when Uzi, my mate Uzi, comes off the field and you realise you're going to field in a test match for Australia.
Yeah, terrifying. didn't really have much interest in going on, to be honest, but I knew that I'd regret it if I did.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got, like, you don't realise, you actually can't really see the ball that well because of the crowd and stuff. So,
yeah.
As well as not wanting the ball to come to me, I was actually genuinely worried that I wasn't going to be able to see it. And if it just came to me, it was going to go for four. So, but no, it was a pretty surreal experience.
Mm.
Mickey, like, I think people talk about the fact that you played at Manly, Warringah Cricket Club. You still do, obviously. Do you look back at a lot of your fielding drills there and stuff like that? I mean, when you were on there, did you think, I have to field better now than I've ever fielded before? Like, I'm really concentrating.
Mm.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I was getting yelled at by the crowd when I walked in, so you know, I had to make sure I did that. But yeah, I've never been the best fielder, so. I'm just glad I stopped a couple of balls.
And were you in kind of earshot to the real chat that was going on the field from the Australian cricket team? I'm just interested in the kind of encouragement phrases that are trotted out by other players. Like, what are blokes saying on the field in the Australian test team?
Did they say, come on, Australia?
Starkey's one was, send his mail to Wales.
Right.
And kept saying,
that is horrific.
Well, hang on. Did he say that, like, ironically or earnestly?
No, they're serious. Like, I was just thinking, this is
send his bales to Wales.
Oh, I think that's a spin-off from Tales Never Fails in New South Wales.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a mouthful, that one.
Yeah. I mean, Mickey, you were lucky in some capacity. You have some friends on the field. There was Jackson Bird was filling a gully while you were filling a point, obviously ex-Manly representative, and Steve O'Keefe there at mid-on as well. So it must have been, in some ways, comforting to have some Manly boys there with you on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Manly Mafia taking over. Yeah, that was really cool. to have Birdie next to me it actually set up my nerves a little bit. So, and then Socky, I'm always on edge around him, so he made it worse again.
and when the game finished, and were you there when it all kind of unfolded, the team song and all that? And
yeah.
Did you get yourself involved in singing that song? And if so, did you know the lyrics, or did they give you a piece of paper? How did that pan out?
Unfortunately, I actually wasn't there for the song because I think I left just before they sung it, because I sort of thought that, I'm 12th man here. It's not really the position of a 12th man to be hanging around for too long.
It's very modest of you to just, my job is done here, I'm off, yeah. See ya.
Yeah, you know, the drink bottles are clean. The Eskies are empty.
But did you get to sort of hang around the dressing room a little bit after the win and celebrate it with the guys, or is it such a kind of sacred moment for the inner sanctum that you left? Basically, I want to know how many beers you had with them and what was said.
Did you soak it?
I was allowed into the change rooms afterwards. Had a couple of beers with them. But yeah, it's really cool. There's a lot of people in there actually, sort of like wives and family and friends and whatnot. So yeah, it was shoulder to shoulder for a little while in there, but then after an hour or so, a few of them started filtering out. And I sort of hung around with those guys for 10 or 15 minutes, and then I thought, I better make my exit now. I don't want to outside my welcome.
I'm sure it's kind of the end of the series, so everyone would be inviting their partners and so forth into sharing the celebrations. Who drinks their beers the fastest?
I think it was me that day.
Well, Mick, I was going to ask you, I mean, this whole thing came about obviously because it was a dead rubber series and the crowd was bored. It was the end of a test match. And then what I'm asking you here is, do you think that your story makes a strong case for full strength alcohol to be served in all areas of the SCG?
Sorry, I missed that.
he's probably precluded by sponsors, you know, to say that. I also wanted to know, just with dressing room politics, Mickey, there was no player in there who kind of just got in there, got his phone, and got out as quickly as he could because he had other friends he wanted to see.
No one like that. Everyone was.
There's always one.
Everyone was very, very social. It's not like dry cricket where you have the one bloke who's off to a wedding or something.
Yeah,
just one bloke. Yeah.
Mickey, I just want to ask you, if you took a catch in the game, do you think you would have instantly retired? Because I mean, life really couldn't have got any better from that moment.
Yeah. Basically, I think the chances that they were pretty minimal, seeing as I couldn't see the bar.
Mickey, I just want to ask you one more question, Mickey. In 2012, we actually played against each other in a third grade game. After you're returning from injury, you've had a number of stress fracture injuries, and this is one of the occasions that you actually were returning. It was a third grade game against Gordon down at.
I think I remember this game.
And you bowled eight wides in your opening three over spell. I'm telling this story for the rest of my life, how many runs should I say that I scored, even though I was bowled for zero, not offering a stroke?
Yeah, I think that day I bowled 18 wides or something. So that wasn't. I think I should have been dropped again after that.
didn't answer the question.
Do you remember Ian playing?
I'd like to say that I do, but
he does. Mickey Edwards remembers me.
Your style.
The guy who left the ball out for zero. Yeah.
Every aspect of my life. Yeah. Mate, I think that'll wrap it up here, but we appreciate you giving us the time today. You've had a wonderful roller coaster over the past week, and good luck for the rest of this season and in the future.
Cheers. Thanks very much. Been a pleasure.
Cheers, Mickey.
We great cricketers work hard. Everything has to be hard at all times. Work hard. Circuit hard. Just be hard. Never smart. Always hard.
Well, here goes. Dave, what a pleasure it is to have on probably one of the most controversial figures in Australian cricket today on the internet.
Huge if true.
Who knows what it will be tomorrow. But a guy who released an article yesterday and has been doing it for a couple of weeks. Former Tasmanian representative, Australian representative, Brett Jeeves, here to talk with the great cricketer about all things Australian cricket. Brett, welcome to the show.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Excellent. I'm just looking at an article from you here today saying, comment from my bunny Boof highlights everything wrong with Australian cricket. Do you want to just talk us through a little bit of the background here, Brett? Because I find it quite amusing.
Well, firstly, I don't create the headline. I probably overstated that quite enormously, but that's what they're there to do, the subby.
They're never catchy, are they? There's about 25 words minimum in those Fox Sports headlines.
Yeah, and it's always about what's wrong in Australian cricket. Not what's wrong with Boof, but what's wrong with Australian cricket. But, I guess it kind of... long story short, I'd written a piece about... the mixed messages from Lehman to Matt Renshaw, who's been amazing. You know, if we look back a short time ago after the Test team capitulated against South Africa in Hobart, we cried and cried and cried. Everyone cried for an opening batter that could stand tall and bat long periods of time and, you know, sort of provide a platform for the middle order to come in and be aggressive. And we found that in Renshaw. He's been amazing. His innings at the SCG was quite extraordinary. Yet we were still negative towards him. The media were, he's too slow, this is outrageous. I remember Eddie Cowan, the MCG, was, you know, 12 not out at lunch, and Ian Healy spraying him. I'm like,
what, we don't need to be 150 at lunch. but anyway, that's an aside. So I kind of just wrote a piece for Fox, a pretty standard sort of column based around the Big Bash and the impact that was having on guys like Jackson Bird, who, you know, was dropped from the last test and was having to fight his way back in the team through bowling four overs in a, you know, in an ultra fluorescent coloured shirt on wickets that have no bearing on India whatsoever. Mentioned the Renshaw stuff in that, and that, you know, I thought it was probably more appropriate that we, you know, love Renshaw and provide him, you know, the right environment, and he should be picked. To me, it's a no-brainer. And I think Darren Lehman was asked about it on a radio station and what he thought, you know, what his opinion on my criticisms were, and he simply stated that he didn't listen to me because I wasn't a very good cricketer. So that's kind of the background of it. And he makes a good point, I've always felt connected with Buff. You know, he's good on the tooth, a little bit lazy, poor work ethic, and probably didn't quite get the best out of himself. And I was pretty much the same. So, you know, I feel like Buff and I should be making love, not going at each other in the media.
I mean, not only did he drop that on you on radio the other day, but he also apparently defriended you on Facebook too, which
huge
is...
huge if true.
Was that the worst day of your life? I mean, that's ice cold.
Nah, look, that's, unfortunately, that all got a bit lost by some of the social media users. I'd mentioned the defriending of Facebook and the fact that I wouldn't be looked upon as a coach in the future in Australia because he defriended me on Facebook. I'd written an article maybe a month ago about the coaching pathway and sort of made mention that, you know, the Australian cricketing system draws from its pool of Facebook friends rather than looking beyond their, you know, immediate circle of mates. So that all kind of got a bit skewed. Darren and I aren't Facebook friends. My Facebook involvement is minimal. And so, no, I can categorically deny that I was not blocked on Facebook.
That's good.
Darren.
I was going to ask you what his Thailand 09 album looks like.
what, sorry?
Oh, you know, yeah, no, don't worry about it. Required 2 minutes of explanation. It's
out of a really bad time. Sorry.
Yeah, no dramas at all. Mate, what you're doing here, I think, is that you're really carving out a bit of a niche for yourself in the media at the moment. Kind of what we do is we try to emphasise that, you know, there's a hierarchical feudal system in grade cricket. But it's really interesting to see that grade cricket is seemingly no different to professional cricket and that there's a similar hierarchical structure. You know, you've got the big dogs up the top, you know, you've got the guys in the middle and everyone else is just striving for relevance. I mean, you played a little bit of international cricket, mostly you're at state level, but the when was the realisation for you that, you know, this was how Australian cricket is?
Yeah, I mean, it probably dawned on me, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years into my domestic career. I was really struggling early. I debuted as a young fella, maybe 3 months after turning 18, and played some one-day cricket. And I mean, back then in 2000, it was a completely different culture again. You could drink booze the night before the game, play hungover, you know. But and it was semi-professional. You know, we all worked. We trained at 6 o'clock. Trained at 7 o'clock in the morning, and everyone, you know, went to work or, depending on their pay scale, probably, you know, played some golf or whatever. I mean, I was working, but once I'd spent enough time in the system and realised that for me to find a level of success within myself as a person, I needed to change my behaviours and my beliefs and what I wanted from the game to fit in with the 25 guys that I was effectively living with, and that's probably the difference in professional cricket to grade cricket, in that, you know, whilst you see your teammates in grade level twice a week and you spend all day Saturday with them, you are removed from them at some stage. You can depart and you don't have to go to training if you don't want to. Of course, that's if you're the first grade skipper. But if you're a professional player, you know, you are there every day and there's no escaping you know, the relationships that are breaking down. There's no escaping your poor form. There's no escaping the fact that, you know, you feel like you're selling your soul a little bit to even try and fit in with a group of guys that, you know, that are completely different to you. So I had a pretty good conversation with my dad after about the fifth year. I'm like, I'm done with this. I had a job lined up to go and cart bricks for a mate who's a brickie. And I was going to pull the pin, and the old man kind of slapped me and said, "You'll never get the opportunity to, you know, sort of make good money and do something that I know you love. So you've got to go and find a way of making it work for yourself." And I did. I drank an enormous amount of booze. I took the piss out of anyone that I could. I started writing a blog for Cricket Tasmania that was a little probably too honest and caused me some angst at different stages. But I kind of found myself a little bit, and I found my enjoyment in the game. And from that, you know, I had two or three good years domestic and had the chance to play some Australian stuff that, you know, no one will remember, and that's okay. But, I mean, the game was good to me and I loved it. But it's I've certainly seen, you know, the highs and the lows of being, you know, I guess a fringe player and really struggling to someone that, you know, has sort of done okay, particularly at that domestic level, and has been well looked after by those that were, I guess, shitting on me 2 or 3 years prior.
You seem to have a very strong capacity for self-reflection, Brett, which I guess is, I guess, partly explains how you're able to articulate the, I guess, culture of Australian cricket that many people won't, and it makes what you write so compelling. I guess I got a double-pronged question. What has been the private reaction from your mates and other people within cricket to this article, these articles you've written, and how many people do you think actually within Australian cricket feel the way you do about this clearly ridiculous hierarchical system that exists within the game, if I could be earnest for a second?
Yeah, look, I mean, if I'm really honest, I feel like I'm able to be really honest because I'm not losing any friends from this. Like, everyone hated me anyway. So I can kind of get away with, you know, people say, "He's a shit bloke." And I mean, that's how it was anyway. So I'm not, I don't lose much from that. I guess within, you know, my close network of friends and family, they're all aware of, you know, I guess my struggle to fit in. At that level, and that's always going to happen. You put 25 guys in together in a room, and it's not always going to be you know, a bed of roses. But I mean, I think, you know, from a broader perspective, I think there are a lot of people who would feel the exact same way. You know, I've been lucky enough to be on a few of the Australian Cricket Association Masters tours, which is a young collection of former first class players and some international guys. You know, they travel into country towns and, you know, spread the message of the game and play a game against the representative teams. And once you get a few beers in with these guys, they all share a really similar message that at different stages throughout their careers, they felt completely removed from their teammates and from the game, and they wanted to quit and it was the end of the world. And so, I mean, I think at some stage, most players have gone through that. You know, those that have gone on to play at the extreme high level and have had, you know, Hall of Fame careers, it's a lot easier for them to reflect back and say, "Well, you know what, I toughed it out and it worked and I'm rich and I've got a boat and you don't. So go to enjoy your day at work tomorrow, you pleb."
Speaking of that sort of loneliness factor and separation from your teammates, Brett, I mean, there was an article you wrote a couple of weeks ago as well about what happened to you when you made it to the South African tour. You came in there for an injury, and we have some international listeners as well who may not know of the story, but you came across Michael Clark and his then girlfriend Lara Bingle, and perhaps you could describe to the listeners what that interaction was.
Yeah, so I know that we're pressed for time. I'll try and keep this brief. The call to go to South Africa was an absolute pinnacle of my cricketing career. You know, to get any involvement, particularly in the Test squad, I'd played a one-day game against Bangladesh prior to that, and, you know, that's like kissing your sister, isn't it? I mean,
I've always said that.
You got to kiss, but it doesn't really count.
The weirdest thing ever.
So, the Bangladeshis were good, but, you know, I started my career with 2 for 11, and I think at the time I was statistically the best international cricketer in the world.
I think. You
never said that before, have you?
Not outside of family reunions. But, so, I mean, with an average of 5.5, whatever that equates to, I had a real swagger on. Better than Alderman.
Started the breath.
Getting the call to go to South Africa, a huge highlight. Test cricket, that's what we all dream about. South Africa. A new experience in itself. So I get to the airport and there's no one there to pick me up. absolutely no one, no Cricket Australia tracksuit. And so I'm like, oh, geez, what do? I'm not well travelled, and I'm not an overly intelligent man when it comes to geography and history of capital cities, etc., and countries. And I didn't know that South Africa was the carjacking capital of the world. So I changed some money, jump in a cab with this guy who's completely shitting himself, thinking that we're going to get killed. I've got two enormous cricket bags with me, a laptop, my full Cricket Australia gear. God. Like we're a beacon. And he's telling me this as well. And I'm like, holy shit, okay. Just get me to the ground as quickly as you can. So anyway, we get to the ground and there'd been a misunderstanding. I was meant to fly into Durban the next day. And the team management had thought that they were going to collect me from Durban at whatever time, and that my flights were booked to Joburg. And that was that. So not a great start, but even at that stage, it just didn't dawn on me that that wasn't a great thing. You know, I was just kind of, you know, what if, you know, I've got my iPod on, you know, life's good. You know, it just didn't make any real impact on me. And we went to Durban, won the next test. So with the team's 2-0 up, and there's huge celebrations. And I'm fitting in okay, you know, getting along well. And we go to Cape Town, where there's all the girlfriends and wives had flown in for a 4-day break. And I was there on my own. Pete Siddle, no missus, and young Phil Hughes, no partner. So those two go off on a 2 or 3 day bender, which is fair because they won the series. And being the new guy, I didn't really want to go on a bender. You know, I felt guilty enough playing golf, let alone...
Do they state how many days the bender's going for before it starts? Just out of curiosity. Yeah. This will go for 3 days.
Pack a shirt, clear your schedules.
They didn't around the pool with their shirts off. No, they didn't.
Okay. Carry on.
So I'd gone to I forget the name of the port in Cape Town. It's got a beautiful setting with restaurants and shopping complex. And so I'm walking back from lunch, and there's an enormous 8-lane highway from that I need to cross to get back to the hotel. There's no cars. It's completely barren. It's, you know, I can see the other ends of the highway. And from out of this walking track behind some trees comes Clark and Dingle.
Behind some trees?
Well, no, there was like a vivid walking track that was covered. It just magically appeared. So, you know, I can see them. They can clearly see me. It's pretty obvious that here we are. And so as I had my headphones in, so as you draw closer to someone in that situation, you go remove your headphones to say g'day. And I kind of got my headphone out, sort of, you know, moved in the position to say hello, and they just completely walked straight past me. And I'm probably lucky that my dad let me watch Baldy Towers and Monty Python at the age of 8. So... those situations, I've always been able to find some humour in. So I started laughing. You know, at that time, I thought it was great. I don't know if they heard me laughing there. I would just walk off.
So you couldn't get any eye contact from either of them? Did you know, a furtive glance from Lara, or did Michael?
No, it's hard to tell. She was wearing some sort of king-size Versace.
I was wondering if they were like in conspiratorial hushed tones to each other. Like, let's just ask this bloke out.
Great lines. I'm in fact that I was looking at her and drooling.
Didn't help.
But she's a very attractive girl as well, though, if you've seen her in the flesh. But she's absolutely stunning. But, yeah, I mean... That start and, you know, all that sort of taking place within a week, it was a really bizarre sort of experience. And then I broke my foot and got sent home. So, that was kind of the end of that. But the interesting part, what hurt me the most, is that about 6 months later, John Hastings made his international debut for Australia. And I was number 19, so that was my one-day number. And John Hastings debuts about 6 months later wearing number 19. I'm like, okay, well... that's the end of that then. Looks like my career's over. But that's kind of, that's how it is. And I guess that's what leads to, the reflection. I've been really fortunate to have sort of come out of cricket and started to make my way, I guess, as a rookie in the real world. I've managed a couple of government programs now, and it's good fun. You know, I'm having a ball, but my learnings from that and the way that I'm treated by bosses and fellow staff and the induction programs and the support that's provided throughout all of my work in the last 5 years really highlights how poorly it is done in cricket. So I guess if I, you know, if I was just sitting on the couch for the last 5 years, I would probably be completely unaware that the way that, you know, I was treated in different situations was not right. But having had, you know, access to some really good people and support post cricket, yeah, I mean, it just highlights that we don't do things very well.
Well, I think Brett, you've certainly sort of shown some courageous journalism, even if it is kind of masked with a lot of humour in there as well. We know something about that, I think. But for you to do that on the international level is, I guess it's something that we appreciate as well. And look, we've appreciated you coming onto the show in voice and describing for us the alpha realities of international cricket and how painful they can be. I guess just on behalf of the boys, cheers for joining the show. And hopefully we can have you on another time to give you some throwdowns.
Yeah, no, look, and without turning this into a love-in, I am a massive fan of what you guys do, read all your stuff. And I think what's great about what you're doing is that there's so many people that can relate to your stories and to your humour and to your observations of great cricket and the way that great clubs roll out. And I think that's what the general punter is looking for, you know, someone that they can relate with. I'm sure Darren Lehman's a terrific bloke. I've never met him, never pressed the
Don't backtrack now.
No.
I'm going to cut this bit out, mate.
what I'm saying is that the guy's a prick. No.
Soundbite.
What Darren's comments did was, I guess, highlight to me exactly where it's at. I said to Sam off air earlier today that I'd been sitting on the Indian Roads metaphor for 8 years, and I'd so desperately been wanting to get in and write that somewhere. So gave me the chance to sit down and for 8 hours and pump something out.
Now it's on the internet forever. Mate, thanks a lot for your time. Catch you around soon.
Good on you guys.
Oh, look, I haven't changed my point of view on the matter. I said what I said a few years ago, and I guess at the moment he's obviously trying to sell a book, so it's amazing how more and more of the story comes out.
So are you two mates?
I think that's a bit of a stretch to say that we're mates.
Well, that's certainly what he's been saying.
Yeah, look, I think, as I said before, it's a bit of a stretch of the imagination, given that we've hardly spoken about since it all happened, and obviously haven't played since, you know, he took over as captain. But anyway, that's all old news now. So, as I said, I think it's more about him trying to promote his book through the summer.
Lads, it's that time of the week again. Hashtag AskTGC. You know it, I know it, Australia knows it. Sam, Dave, Ian, let's answer some questions. Third person now.
In case we've forgotten names,
I like to point because I only see you guys once a week. AskTGC, who wants to go first?
I've got one that's probably the most recent.
Go on,
so there was a tweet posted by Dave. Do we do that? Do we reveal who's behind it?
Never.
Cut it. Look, I'll go first in response to a recent tweet that was put up on behalf of the Grade Cricketer. It was a picture of a beloved character in Australian soap TV, Jared Toadfish Rebecca. never thought I'd say that in my life.
Does he ever get called Jared on the show?
Yeah. I don't know. I just thought I'd be formal about it.
Toadie.
But look, just to explain, if you haven't seen it, it's a picture of Toadie with his, dead wife or not, we're not sure, Dee Bliss, and him driving her off the cliff. And if that's how you say it.
The background of the story is that 10 years ago, Toadie and Dee Bliss on Neighbours were getting married. Just after they tied the knot, they were driving away from the wedding and they drove off a pier into the water. The tweet shows Toadie's car going into the water and looking very devastated as he searches for his wife, who is later found to have, faked her own death.
Can happen 21. Stay safe on the roads out there, people. Don't text and drive.
So anyway, the tweet says, when your wife fakes her own death because you won't give up cricket. And Stephen Cornford writes in and says, how did Toadfish pull her? Classic case of someone batting above their average.
How much do you hate that sentence right there? Whenever anyone is in a new relationship on Facebook, it's almost inevitable that someone will immediately write under that, you're batting above your average, mate.
I mean, the emphasis there is on her. How did Toadfish get her?
Yes.
In grade cricket, though, it would have been her would have been changed to it.
Yes, that's the first thing.
Yeah,
I wanted,
which is shocking and indictment. It's the Australian men.
Yes, exactly.
Terrible objectification.
Well, that's what our podcast is, and it's highlighting how silly Australian men are.
Well, don't give it away. Don't give it away. Save it. He goes, I want to interrogate the term batting above one's average. I just want to turn this to cricket. What does that mean? I mean, your average is every. Your average defines you. How can you ever say I bat above it?
Yeah, Pez. It's maths. It's layered. It's layered in that whole thing of new season. Now, I've played, you know, not me, but the cricketer who has played 15 seasons of great cricket, but this season is going to be my breakout season. I averaged 17.64 in fourth grade, but this season I'm going to average 42 in second grade. No, you're not. Your average is your average.
Well, I think it's quite reductive to women as well, because it's asserting that your average is a woman, and then the woman is assigned a number, the number being your batting average. So essentially, it's like how Trump rates women out of 10.
Yeah.
I was thinking it's more like imagine Bradman's average. I mean, his average is 99.94, and he said, "Yeah, but I bat above that. I'm really probably 110, 115, etc." He's like, "No, you're not. You're 99.94."
Well, if it wasn't for his last innings where he was crying week from him, he would have averaged 120.
So many tears in cricket.
Might be some more tears after this question, which comes from Luke Quinlivan.
Excellent.
A good friend of the show. Dear grade cricketer, I'm dating a girl who's Souvlakian and therefore a cricket novice. Mm. My dad really approves of her too. I've spent the last few weeks bullshitting her about the Big Bash and test players I've played against and or coached to greatness. It has worked, and she thinks that I'm not playing with the Thunder by choice. In an attempt to assimilate, she's in the process of organising a backyard cricket barbecue. Tonight, I realised that the guest list includes at least one current first grader from a rival club, and then he does a tear emoticon. Should I come clean about being a washed-up middle grader, or call immigration anonymously knowing that scratching the surface of her visa credentials will see her on her way? Tip the authorities off about your girlfriend's visa credentials, or come clean about his background.
You've got to do what you got to do, don't you? I mean, you need to preserve your own identity at all costs.
Yes.
And if that first grader, I mean, that's the thing, because in most people's circles, or in most people's lives, you are the cricketer. Mm. So when you come across someone in real life who is actually a cricketer and also better than you, or in a present state more accomplished than you, that's quite a daunting thing, because then they might suddenly, in some obscure, faux reality, that they'll reveal actually your weaknesses against the short ball.
That's exactly right, he goes. But what we're picking up on here is like the very strange phenomenon of actually running into other cricketers once your cricket career is over.
Yeah.
Because we all separate ourselves into individual lives so we can start carving out these lies about ourselves and our cricket. We deliberately stop interacting with other cricketers. So I do feel sorry for Luke in that situation, that he's carved out an identity as a Thunder player, which I think is quite good. Like a fringe Thunder player, it's quite a hipster cricket identity. Yeah. Most would say, I was just a local club legend who averaged, 20 runs above what I did. But him to say, I'm a fringe Thunder player who's kind of got dreams of making it, is very good. And now he has to kind of work in with another first grade cricketer who's going to wow for him. Mm. I feel sorry for him.
His girlfriend's organising the guest lists, and how's she doing that? Because she's inviting first graders. How's that? Is it like a public Facebook invite and anyone can join?
How's she also mingling with first grade cricketers as a kind of new entrant to the country?
Because that's the most concerning factor for Luke, is that his girlfriend is actively cavorting around online or via phone with first graders.
He want to ask if she's been spending time at Upstairs Cargo or something like that.
Okay. I've got one here on the Twitter machine, chaps, from Jeffrey Gabriel, who I just want to point out, I instantly regret reading this out, because his Twitter profile picture is of him making a circle with his finger and thumb. That's at Jeffrey_Gabriel.
Trump's
he
ball.
Asks, at great cricketer, to what extent is a first grader's reputation enhanced by a sub fielding in a test match? Hashtag ask TGC. To what extent is a first grader's reputation enhanced by sub fielding in a test match? Well, I mean, it's obviously just asking about Mickey Edwards, who we've just had on the show, wonderful guest and fan of the show.
How did you find Mickey when we had him on? How do you think he's handling this?
He's someone who's not media trained, which is nice. It's actually nice to talk to someone earnestly. We asked him about drinking beer in the sheds, and he gave an earnest, appraisal of that experience, which was nice. Whereas if he was media trained, perhaps he wouldn't have been given. He would have been so forthcoming with that answer. So it was actually, I think, from my perspective, it was quite refreshing to.
Do you get the feeling that he's just like, I've had enough of this?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I got the feeling when he was fielding as well, he's just like, I actually don't want this attention. But it was just, being at the ground, it was actually quite endearing and very funny.
It's social capital through the roof.
Social capital through the roof. That's the answer to the question.
Exactly.
Any more questions?
edit, must edit this part. You've got to edit this out.
Edit this bit out.
Curtis Tui writes in, says, new Melbourne Stars leg spinner Liam Bowe got me out 5 seasons in a row in local Bendigo cricket, despite being 6 years younger than me. And this season I retired as B-grade captain to concentrate on my job as an unsuccessful travel agent. That's not the end. I like this specificity. I like that. Liam's rise to stardom has made me realise that I should take up the game again because despite my average of 14.6, the real reason behind my shortcoming was the fact that I was facing world-class cricketers. Do you think that despite my lack of talent, terrible rig, susceptibility to the swinging ball and mental weakness, it is possible that I could also make a quick rise to professional cricket?
Can I just say...
the most self-deprecating human ever.
That was just perfectly read from start to finish. I mean, my big takeaway from that question is, was you reading it out? Yeah,
thank you.
But also, yeah, I just love the specificity of it being not just a travel agent or just working in the travel profession, but a failed one.
Yeah, an unsuccessful just travel agent.
And there's no way he can go back to it.
Well, it's an industry that's been disrupted by online, so it's a difficult profession to cut it in.
Webjet.com.au,
Self-awareness has never been good with cricket.
No.
Really. To succeed, you must have a completely inflated or deluded view of yourself, I think he's going to struggle, Curtis, to start with.
Yeah. Someone asked us a question last week about playing. They once played against Hilton Cartwright or they got him out or something, and their question was, is it right for me to continue to bring it up that I got out a test match player or something along those lines? There's a lot of these stories, a lot of these questions that we get in about, I once played against someone who is now famous, which is something that we've often done on the show and we just like to name drop as much as everyone else. Yes. So.
But also we're getting a lot of like Ask TGC questions when, you know, after the fact, like, I've already done this thing.
Yeah.
Should I have done that? Like, maybe ask us some questions before you're about to do something.
I really want to be...
we can help you with those.
I really
want to
be involved,
in the
in direct decision making. I want to help these... our loyal listeners, our loyal fans out there. I want to help them through some dark times, and I don't care about averaging 14.621.
About averages. Let's talk more about life away from cricket.
I want life shit, man. I want some real life shit. Let's talk about what's happening at home, what's happening with your girlfriend, what's happening with your job. Yep. I don't care about being alpha'd. Everyone's getting alpha'd every single day.
Global markets.
I got alpha'd 4 times coming in here, 3 times by you guys.
Yep.
So...
there it is from Higos.
Real life questions. Hashtag AskTGC. Facebook, Twitter, you know the drill. Guys, it's been a fantastic show. I've enjoyed having you here. Have you enjoyed having me here?
It's the most sarcastic show of all time.
It's been good.
Yeah. Well, it's been something. Huge show. 3 guests on. 3 wonderful guests. I've enjoyed it. It's also been nice to be back in the studio. Proper sound quality as well. That's nice as well. One thing I would like to say is that I would like our loyal listeners to get on the iTunes chart and just rate stuff. I mean, it's just a little thing, and it's basically just a tickle approval that I'll never get from my father. Yeah. So go on iTunes, you know, send us a review. We like that. We like doing that.
Give us what our dads won't.
iTunes reviews.
iTunes reviews. See you next week.